I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, another in our series of conversations with the candidates. Jesse Colvin is running for Congress in Maryland's sprawling 1st Congressional District, which includes all or part of 12 different counties. In a crowded primary field, Jesse Colvin beat 5 other Democrats. Now, in the general election, he faces 4-term incumbent Andy Harris in the only one of 8 Maryland districts that leans Republican. Colvin served 4 deployments in Afghanistan as an Army Ranger and an intelligence officer. He has since worked in banking and as a management consultant. This is his first run for public office. Early voting starts in 2 weeks. Jesse Colvin joins me when Midday starts right after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for hanging with us this afternoon. Today, we're going to continue our series of conversations with the candidates. My guest is Jesse Colvin, the Democratic nominee for Congress in Maryland's 1st Congressional District. The 1st District includes the Eastern Shore, plus parts of Baltimore, Harford, and Carroll counties. That's a total of 12 counties that are all or part of this district. It's the only congressional district in Maryland that Donald Trump carried in 2016. Jesse Colvin was one of 6 Democrats on the ballot in the primary last June. He won that primary with 38% of the vote. He now faces the incumbent, Republican Andy Harris, who is running for his 5th term in Congress. Libertarian Jenica Martin is also on the ballot in this race. Jesse Colvin served 4 combat deployments in Afghanistan as an Army Ranger and an intelligence officer. He holds a master's in international and public affairs from Columbia University and a bachelor's in history and Arabic from Duke University. More recently, he has worked in business consulting and banking. He is 34 years old. He and his wife Jordan had their first child last spring. They live in Perry Hall. We will take your calls and comments for Jesse Colvin a little bit later in our program. In the meantime, we are live streaming on the WIPR Facebook page, and you can post a comment there if you'd like. Mr. Colvin, it's great to meet you.
Please call me Jesse. Thank you very much for having us, Tom.
Well, thank you for coming in. One of the big concerns that a lot of Americans have, not just folks in the 1st Congressional District, but and they came to fore certainly last week during the Kavanaugh nomination proceedings, is this dysfunction in Washington, this incredible political polarity that's going on in Washington. If you're elected to Congress, what can you do to reduce it?
I think Congress is saddled by careerism, and I think it is in part broken by hyperpartisanship. And there is a wave of military veterans running for Congress this year. I'm one of them. There's about 100 of us. And we want to put country over party, and I think that's a great thing. There's a new organization called With Honor, and they're supporting veterans this year, Noah's Ark style. So when they endorse a Democrat, they bring a Republican, and vice versa. And you have to sign a pledge, and it's grounded in values from the military. Civility, integrity, courage. So civility, once a month in office, you'll get coffee with somebody from the other side of the aisle. You'll co-sponsor pieces of legislation, and it could be something as small and simple as supporting the Girl Scouts, or it could be something as large and important as let's revisit interrogation policy, because we haven't talked about Guantanamo Bay in 5 years. And it's things like if you ever get a contribution from a source that after the fact you find out would taint your reputation, you give it to charity. There are a lot of folks counting us veterans to come to Congress next year. And when the party bosses say vote down party lines just to score political points, we stand up and speak some truth to power and say, no, put us in a room and we'll come out with a bipartisan bill.
For years in American politics, people have pointed to military experience as a good background for a political career. Hmm. What do you think when you look back on your time in the military, which was for several years? How long were you active?
I served 6 years.
Yeah. So in those 6 years, you mentioned some of the values of the military. Hmm. I would imagine that there isn't a member of Congress that doesn't say he or she shares those values.
Sure.
I mean, so it's not particularly unique necessarily to the military. But what do you think your military experience prepares you to do in the political realm in the United States Congress?
I think veterans listening or spouses or family members of veterans or folks who are around the military will get this implicitly. The military teaches you teamwork. The military teaches you leadership. Those are two qualities sorely lacking in Congress. And to be frank, I think on both sides of the aisle some days, those are two qualities definitely lacking in the incumbent. I can tell you my first deployment to Afghanistan, I went to 7 memorial services. And I was all 26, 27, so you grow up very fast. Early on that deployment, my boss's boss pulled me aside and he said, "Jesse, I fired the last 4 guys in your job." And then he just stopped talking. I said, "All right, sir, well, what does that mean for me?" He said, "I don't care if you have enough energy. I don't care if you have enough resources. I don't care if you have enough time. If the Afghan allies we're working with aren't up to snuff, if your best deputy is on R&R, you'll get the job done, you'll get results, or we'll fire you." I served in an elite unit. I served in the special operations community. But these veterans running this year across the country, we all have that story. And wouldn't it be great if that ethos, that attitude comes to Washington?
If you're elected, you're one of 535 members of Congress. There's another 100 in the Senate that have to come on board with any legislation that actually passes. What does leadership mean when you're one of 535? I mean, it's one thing to be leading a unit, a military unit, where you really are the boss.
Sure.
And you know your boss and his boss and her boss.
Chain of command.
Right, chain of command. But what does leadership mean in a group of 535 people?
I think it's a great question. Early on in the campaign, I had a chance. If you ever watch C-SPAN, your listeners watch C-SPAN.
I do, all the time. I'm a nerd.
Sure. So majority minority leaders, and then it looks like the gentleman who might be the parliamentarian of Congress, maybe the gentleman who wrote the books and the rules, he's the parliamentarian. There's a guy named Charlie Johnson who's the parliamentarian emeritus. He's been there for 50 years. And I had a chance to sit down with him, and it was really a chance just to soak up the wisdom. I tried to show up with 2 smart questions and a notebook, and I just took as many notes as possible. And one of the questions I asked was, I asked, how many committees can you sit on and do the job effectively? And he said 2, one's for your district, one's for your country. And I also said, when I win, I want to make Congress functional again. I want to work across the aisle. Where does that happen? And we were in the chamber. He said, well, it doesn't happen in this room. And then he pointed to the part of the building where the Fox and MSNBC and all the TV interviews happen. He said, don't be one of those representatives who flock to the TV camera, because it doesn't happen there. He says it happens in the gym, it happens in the restaurant, it happens in the hallways. There are a lot of elected officials in Washington who are looking to score political points and looking to get famous. I want to represent the 735,000 people in our district. That's part of it. That's leadership in Washington. So it's behind the scenes. It's rolling up your sleeves and building relationships. I think this job comes down to relationships. You asked about where does leadership start. I think it's relationships. I think to do this job well, you have to build relationships that bridge gaps, whether it's culture or age or race or gender or political affiliation. That's leadership in Washington. Leadership in the district is, maybe it's not in the official job description, but I think this job comes with the ability to wrap your arms around other leaders in the community and tackle shared problems. So if we're talking about the opioids epidemic and we are getting hammered in our district, if you're talking about education, if you're talking about veterans issues, that is in the district. You know, this job also comes with a camera and a gaggle of reporters if you want it, and it is bringing attention to issues and bringing attention to stories that will help us as a community. So I think there's leadership in Washington and leadership back home in our district.
The first district voted for Donald Trump by 29 points in 2016. It was the only district in the state that Mr. Trump carried. And your opponent, Congressman Harris, won with 68% of the vote the last time he ran. He's running for a 5th term. What indication do you see that the first district is interested in a Democratic representative in Congress or a change in any way?
Yeah, I can tell you, after a year of campaigning, we just did, we're in the middle of an RV tour of our district right now. So we're doing a 12 counties and 12 days RV tour. Today's day 11. We're doing town halls every night. So if you can hear it in my voice, my apologies. After 30,000 miles, after this RV tour, after a year of campaigning, I can tell you I know 2 things. One is this race is a referendum on Andy Harris. It is not left versus right. It is not Democrats versus Republicans. It's a referendum on Andy Harris, full stop. And the second thing is there is an insurgency in Maryland's 1st Congressional District. And I know that because I'm the ringleader. And I know that because my wife is the brains of the operation and our 6-month-old is our top-rated door knocker. But we're over 1,500 volunteers at this point. We're going toe-to-toe on fundraising with an incumbent who can call a special interest and raise $10,000 in 5 minutes. I'm not taking a dime from corporate PACs. We just have each other. And I know it because our supporters and our donors, there's almost 7,000 of them at this point, are Democrats and Independents and Republicans.
You received 14,000 votes in a primary. It was a crowded field, six folks running. About 39,000 Democrats voted in the primary. Mm. In order to beat Andy Harris, you're going to have to get a whole lot more people coming out and supporting you. Mm. What makes you think that you're going to be able to pull that off?
That's a great question. It's a fair question. So in the primary, it was a crowded field, and we had done a very good job raising enough funds to communicate with people. Our job was not to get everybody was going to come on the primary. We were focused on a specific universe, and the folks that we communicated with, we did exceedingly well. I can tell you that the next, in the present, I can tell you the next fundraising reports due to the FEC are due in a couple of days. I strongly encourage you to check them out. I don't want to publicly reveal the numbers when we're knocking doors and Independents and Republican doors, but I can tell you they're we're really happy with where we are. There's, part of it is, when I first called the National Party, they didn't quite put me on hold to find a map of our district to remember they had given up on us years ago, but that's not far from what happened. Nobody ever anticipated a candidate who would show up and put 30,000 miles on the road. We were on the lower shore yesterday, so the three southern counties in Maryland's eastern shore. It was our 40th trip to Maryland's lower shore, a campaign trip. Nobody anticipated that that somebody put 30,000 miles on the truck. We have
built. Has the National Party jumped in? I mean, are they supporting you wholeheartedly? Do they think this is a district they can win?
They have been incredibly.
They and all their great wisdom?
Yeah, they and all their great wisdom. Incredibly skeptical at first. We outraised Andy Harris in our first quarter of fundraising, and that was my wife at 7 months pregnant in the snow in December hand-delivering invitations to fundraisers in the snow. We have built a political tent that goes from a Bernie Sanders chapter. I don't know if you know this, but there's a Bernie Sanders chapter there was in Cecil County, all the way to Congressman Wayne Gilchrist, who was a member of the GOP, held the seat for 9 terms, is still a member of the GOP. All the
who
way
lost to Mr. Harris.
He did. All the way to leaders from the Reagan, H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush cabinets. So we have built this tent, and we have 1,500 volunteers, and we're knocking doors like crazy, and we have some endorsements nationally. And this is the most serious campaign that has been run in this district in almost a decade.
I'll ask Mr. Harris this when I speak to him next week. For him, the question is, what does it mean to be a Republican in this day and age? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are Trump Republicans, there are more centrist Republicans. And I think the same question has to be asked of any Democrat running for office, because there's the Sanders-Warren wing of the progressive wing of the party. There is the more centrist wing. I don't know what you'd call it, the Schumer-Pelosi wing or whatever. But what does it mean to be a Democrat to you in this age with the president we have, with the Congress and Senate that we have, even for that matter with the Supreme Court that we have? What are the Democratic ideals that you embrace? I mean, you're running as a Democrat, not as a Republican or an Independent. What does it mean to you?
I'm very off the beaten path in life. My parents met at the University of Maryland Law School. I'm an Army Ranger. When my dad met my mom at law school, he had a VW van, he had a beard and a ponytail, to give you an idea of. And he's been a public defender in the state of Maryland my entire life. My mom's a judge. And I became an Army Ranger. I taught English to Iraqi refugees living in Damascus, Syria in 2006. I'm a Democrat, my wife's a Republican. We get asked all the time, how does that work? I don't think the government and the federal government can be the answer to everyone's problems for all time, everywhere. We go broke, but I do think the government can be a force for good in people's lives. My political heroes are President Truman and FDR. That was when we were desegregating the army and also defeating the Nazi regime and the Empire of Japan. I get personally frustrated. I have no ambitions. This campaign is a referendum on Andy Harris, and I want to represent everybody in our district. But I do get frustrated when the Democratic Party is portrayed as somehow less credible in national security. And I do think it's exciting that there are all these veterans running for Congress this year. Many of us are on the left, and we're going to bring a gravitas and a credibility that just hasn't been there in a long time.
Jesse Colvin is the Democratic nominee for Congress in Maryland's 1st District. He is running against the incumbent Republican Andy Harris. If you have questions for Jesse Colvin, you'll have a chance to ask them when we come back from a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. You can find me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation here from Studio A. Stick around.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, WYPR reporter John Lee and Kamau High. He's now the deputy features editor at the Baltimore Sun. They're going to join me for the Midday News Wrap. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review A Comedy of Errors at the Annapolis Shakespeare Company. That's coming up tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Jesse Colvin. He's the Democratic nominee for Congress in Maryland's 1st District. He's running against the incumbent Republican Andy Harris. You are welcome to join our conversation with Jesse Colvin at 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wypr.org to drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us and ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. When you talk about bipartisan behavior in Congress and getting rid of this polarity, give me some examples. You mentioned something as like small, like the Girl Scouts or something like that. But
sure.
Give me some examples of legislation or issues that you think you can reach across the aisle and move legislation.
Well, I can tell you what's at stake in our district. I don't think it's enough to be against something. I tell people on the campaign trail it's not enough to be against something. We have to be for something. If I'm going to inspire you to come knock a door or cast a vote or support us. I mean, the fatalities from the opioids epidemic in our congressional district are 50% higher than the national average. We're getting hammered. Outside Baltimore City, Cecil County is hardest hit in the state. That should be the most bipartisan issue in Congress. We will never make substantive progress there until we find members of Congress, and I don't care if they're a Democrat, an independent Republican, who are in the back pocket of the pharmaceutical industry. I happen to run against Dr. Harris, who has taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from Big Pharma. We will never make progress on that issue until we vote those folks out. If you want to talk about something in the international realm, something as simple as a North Korea policy, you know, I think one of Congress's most solemn responsibilities is international affairs. And I think one of the reasons of many that we need a new generation of leadership who's going to put country over party is we need a new generation who has the background and credibility and interest in former relationships on the international stage. How do we avoid a reckless war of choice with North Korea? That should be the most bipartisan issue in Washington that day, that week, that month. I can tell you in our district, you know, there's 435, you mentioned there's 535 members of Congress. There are 435 congressional districts. Exactly one is home to Chesapeake Bay. That's us. I refuse to believe that an investment in the environment and what's good for the economy in our district are somehow mutually exclusive. I think they're hand in glove. Our environmental platform is 10 billion oysters by 2025, which will do fantastic things for the environment. We'll do even better things for our economy. That is equally bipartisan as well. So those are three examples just off the top of my head.
And we'll dig into some of those in a little bit. Jesse Colvin's People Over Party message is just what's called for in these divisive times. This is from Emily on Facebook Live. She says, I hope that Republicans, independents, and Democrats alike will get out and vote for him on November 6th. Jesse is what our future looks like, young, smart, and service oriented. So you got a fan there on Emily.
Is that a plant or is that real?
I don't know. Well, you know, it's on Facebook Live, and of course it's open to everybody, Russians included, I guess.
Thank you, Emily.
Susan in Baltimore City, welcome to Midday with Jesse Colvin.
Thank you very much.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have two questions. First, I was hoping that Mr. Colvin could talk about the impact that the Trump administration's immigration policies have had on the seafood crabbing industry on the Eastern Shore, and also about climate change and the rising sea levels and the impact that it's going to have on the Eastern Shore. And then I also wanted to know where I can send him some money.
Well, we're not going to get into that part of it, but you can, I'm sure, go to the Jesse Colvin website and figure that out. Well, thank you for that call, Susan. So the environment, a big issue, as is immigration, the H-2B visa program, sure, which has been cut by the Department of Homeland Security. Congressman Harris takes credit for having an extension of those, adding sure, another 15,000 spots. They don't all come to the Chesapeake Bay, but some of them do. Your take on it.
Susan, was it called?
It's a Susan in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm. Susan, thank you for calling in. Yeah, well, I mean, so we're doing this 12-county, 12-day RV tour of the district, and we're trying to tell the story of the district. We're trying to visit as many small businesses as possible, as many pillars of the community as possible. Yesterday, we were in Somerset County, so this is a very well-timed question. And I spent some time in a seafood packing plant in Crisfield. And they have they employ about 50 people locally. They employ maybe three times that across the United States. They reach markets as far as Asia. You know, I had a chance to sit down with Senator Mikulski, and it was a chance. Same deal when I sit down with Congressman Wayne Gilchrist. I try to bring my notebook, and I try to show up with two smart questions, and then I mostly listen. And she used to call those crab packing or crab picking companies 6 months ahead of the H-2B visa every year and the lottery and say, how are you doing? Do you need help? This year, the opposite happened. Nobody lifted a finger from the incumbent's office. And then we had a self-induced crisis. And then after the fact, it's kind of how you alluded to it, Tom. And so I see my job as to pick up the phone. I think part of this job, maybe it's not the official job description, but it's keep your finger on the pulse of the communities. And we have a huge district, so that's a lot of fingers and a lot of pulses. And call 3 to 6 months ahead of time and say, how are you doing on your visas this year? Do you need help? It doesn't just sit in this immigration silo. It's a economics issue. It's a way of life issue. You know, we're the only congressional district with its home to Chesapeake Bay and a way of life here and livelihoods here. I mean, everything is in the DNA that starts with the bay and its rivers and its tributaries. That way of life needs a champion in Congress. And if you ask me who in Washington should be the number one defender of those things, it's the representative from Maryland's first.
Is the economic argument to the Department of Homeland Security going to be enough to be persuasive to have them increase the number? I mean, if, in fact, the businesses on the Eastern Shore are hurting because they're not able to hire enough temporary workers to do the job seasonally that they need, what do you do to convince DHS that the immigration restrictions that they are clearly committed to are relaxed?
I haven't spoken with officials from the Department of Homeland Security. I can tell you that my understanding is for every one job packing or picking crab or crab meat, there are three other jobs directly linked to it, whether it's driving the meat somewhere or logistics. I can tell you, when we have, if you want Congress to be functional again, you have to put into Congress, stock Congress with people who don't lead with ideology. If you were an ideological leader in Iraq or Afghanistan or Vietnam, you got people killed. And one reason I'm so excited about this new generation of military veterans coming to Washington or a country or party is because we bring that practical, pragmatic, let's just get Congress working again attitude. I think the second question was about climate change. You know, at the beginning of the campaign, I reached out to the most conservative politically real estate agents I could find on the Mid-Shore, on Maryland's Eastern Shore. That's really Dorchester County. And I called and I said, I don't care if you believe in climate change. I personally do. I just want to know what you're seeing in your markets. What are your buyers asking? What are you hearing from sellers? What are the insurance companies saying? Buyers are asking, is this the wrong time to buy because they know about rising sea level? Sellers under the age of 80 care deeply about this, and the insurance companies are already adjusting their rates. My point is, there's this fray of talking heads screaming at each other on cable news, and there are politicians who benefit from that status quo and add to that status quo. I want nothing to do with that. There have been screaming arguments on TV for decades about polar bears and Al Gore. I want to talk to you about what I'm hearing from conservative real estate agents, politically conservative, in Dorchester County, because it's not academic and it's not conceptual. It's very real.
Jesse Colvin is running for Congress in the 1st District. Our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. A number of callers and email comments. George says, what is your position on comprehensive immigration reform? So we talk about the H-2B visa program. That's one little slice of immigration. But as you mentioned, it's larger than that. But in terms of comprehensive immigration reform, George asks, will you support legislation to give DACA recipients a path to citizenship? What should the immigration laws in the United States of America look like?
Yeah, I think if we're ever going to get a bipartisan comprehensive immigration reform passed, it's going to be a table with four legs. And the first leg is going to be, we're going to need security at the border. And this is, I'm served as an Army Ranger, intelligence officer, spent a lot of time tracking Al-Qaeda and Taliban terrorists who are transiting a very porous border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. It can't come at the expense of American workers, and it can't punish American companies that play within the rules. That's what happened this year with the H-2B visa situation on the Eastern Shore. I think the other thing is, you know, I didn't deliver my stump speech here because this is an interview, but I begin my stump speech by talking about where I come from. And where I come from, I'm a fourth generation Marylander. My great grandfather, we're a family of immigrants. He showed up to this country through the Port of Baltimore in 1899, and we've been in Maryland ever since. So, you know, what's written on the side of the Statue of Liberty, we are a nation of immigrants, and that's part of our values. So that's what it would look like. It will never happen. We have not had a comprehensive bipartisan immigration reform bill in decades, and it's because of who's in there around the table trying to figure it out. And when you have ideologues like an Andy Harris, if ever, the only glimmer of hope I can offer you is if you ever think we could get to the point where we have a comprehensive immigration reform bill, you're going to have people who think compromise is the goal and not a dirty word. And in our district, that starts with voting out Andy Harris and voting me in.
Let's go to Scott in Perry Hall. Scott, welcome to Midday with Jesse Colvin.
Hello. I had a question about, what's your position on net neutrality specifically? I had already, when it was a big issue with the FCC voting on it, I had already contacted Andy Harris on it, and he was very pro-free market, which doesn't quite work when it's a very oligopic system, and I wanted to see what you thought on the issue.
Hey, Scott, thanks for the question. I would on this issue, I am absolutely on the other side of the table from Dr. Harris. I can also tell you we happen to have two former chairmen of the FCC who live in our district. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican, and they've been advising me on a number of issues, including broadband. We have a massive connectivity issue in our district. The lack of internet is a education issue, it's an equality issue, it's an access issue, it's an entrepreneurship issue, it's all of the above. One of our supporters used to have to go to the Hampton Inn parking lot with her daughter. Her daughter's now a freshman at Towson because they didn't have internet homes.
Had to go to the hotel parking lot to get broadband.
To get broadband, to submit papers in high school. And of course, her daughter was 17 and procrastinated. So this woman said, you know how many trips I had to go to that parking lot at 1 a.m., 2 a.m.? The other thing is, one of the reasons I think it's going to be incredibly impactful to have this new generation coming in is we're in our 30s and 40s. If you remember the Facebook, when the leaders from Facebook were brought to Capitol Hill for oversight hearings, I think it's a little far to say that we have, say, senators who think the internet is a series of tubes, but it wasn't far from it. If you watched them ask questions to Mark Zuckerberg and about Facebook, it's clear they don't really know what Facebook is and are definitely not using it regularly. And these veterans, we also worked in the private sector. I worked in banking. I worked in management consulting to understand how technology is changing, whether it's an infrastructure bill or an education bill or a healthcare bill. You need folks who really understand these changes. And that's another reason I'm excited about this wave of young veterans running.
If Congress flips, mm-hmm. as many people are expecting that it will, if this district flips, we would have putatively a completely Democratic delegation, eight people, so because the other people who are running are on the Democratic side are heavily favored to win. If that happens here in Maryland, and if that happens nationally, if there is a congressional Democratic majority in Congress, what happens then? Mr. Trump will be the president. The Senate may or may not be in the same political divide it's in now. But let's say the Senate does not flip and Congress does. What should Congress do? There are a number of people, talking about pursuing a number of things against this current administration. How are you going to play into that?
I'm not sure your listeners are going to be entirely satisfied or happy with the direction I'm going to take this answer, but let me just tell you what's happening in our district. Opioids fatalities 50% higher than national average. There are 54,000 people who rely on the Affordable Care Act. We have a broadband issue. We're the only congressional district that's home to the Chesapeake Bay, and I'm running against an incumbent who's in the coal caucus. We don't have any coal in our district. I talk a lot about ALICE families on the campaign trail. ALICE is an acronym. It's Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. It's basically the family for whom if the carburetor breaks or a fuel injector.
The working poor.
Sure.
Right.
37% of working families in our district are ALICE families. There are going to be a lot of politicians, whether the House flips or almost flips or flips in a big way, are going to be flocking to TV cameras and flocking to do some big flashy things because they are trying to make names for themselves and make waves. I'm going to go to Washington and try to represent everybody in our district, and those are the things we're for. Regardless of who the majority and minority leaders are, I know those are the things I need to work on because that's what the people in our district are relying on me to get done. So those are going to be my priorities.
I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. My guest today, Jesse Colvin. He's running for Congress in the 1st Congressional District. Let's go back to the phones to Richard in Arnold. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning, sir. Being a military man, I assume that you are familiar with the concept of God and country, correct?
That's to you, Mr. Colvin. That's definitely not to me.
Yeah. And I am concerned about one thing the Democrats never seem to talk about, and that's religion. I am concerned that 7,000 ministers have just signed a petition, signed on to an anti-social justice proclamation. This is what's behind Brett Kavanaugh. This is what's behind a lot of the things that are going on in our country now. I'd like to know where you are in relation to religion and politics.
All right, thanks for that call. I am not familiar with the petition the caller is alluding to, personally.
Neither am I. I think it's an incredibly important question. It hasn't come up on the campaign trail just like that. Our Constitution has laid out separation of church and state in a way that was rather static until very recently. We have somehow found ourselves in a political environment where religion is more often used to divide than unite, and I think that's reflected in Richard's question. So the Supreme Court nomination process. There were a lot of politicians who tried to use this issue to get in front of a camera to score political points. And there were a lot of members of the House of Representatives who held no bearing over a Senate confirmation process, run to the camera and try to use it to score political points. Dr. Harris used it to, he did a radio interview and he called Dr. Ford a troubled woman with psychological problems. I'm trying to answer this question in a way that reveals how I'm thinking about how I approach this job. I can tell you, since Richard, you're a military veteran, early on in one of my deployments, I found out that one of the women on my team had been sexually assaulted. And I turned to my deputy, who was all of 22, I was about 27, 28 in that story. And I said, "Do you know what to do?" And he said, "No, sir, I don't." And he asked me the same question. And I said, "I don't." And I said, "Well, let's just check the manual." And he said, "Sir, we don't have a manual for anything that we're doing." And then I called headquarters, and now we're talking to the majors and the colonels. They didn't know what to do either. But it turns out I had the authority to initiate and lead an investigation, which we did, and got the perpetrator fired. And I bring it up because I think, first off, that is a blinking red light of a broken system that the 27-year-old and the 22-year-old had to navigate essentially with their moral North Stars out of that situation. But I think it also comes down to relationships. The survivor in that story is now the godmother to my wife and I's six-month-old. And we're very close friends. She supports us. After she saw Dr. Harris's comments about Dr. Ford, she called and said, "I'd like to write a letter." And she didn't want to put her last name, which I can completely understand. "But I want to write a letter to your email program and to your Facebook page." And she did. And the title of the letter is Jesse Believed in Me, Therefore That's Why I Believe in Jesse.
Jesse Coleman is the Democratic nominee for Congress in the 1st District, which includes all of the Eastern Shore and parts of Baltimore, Carroll, and Harford counties. You are welcome to join our conversation with Jesse Coleman when we come back from a quick break. We are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. You can catch us on Twitter at @MiddayWIPR. You can send us an email, midday@WIPR.org. You can give us a phone call, 410-662-8780. We're back in just 90 seconds. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest is Jesse Coleman. He's the Democratic nominee for Congress in our 1st congressional district. It's a sprawling district that includes the Eastern Shore all the way up to parts of Harford County. If you have questions for Mr. Colvin, our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@WIPR.org. You can catch us on Twitter at @MiddayWIPR. And you can also tune in to the WIPR Facebook page where we are streaming. The United States tax code. What should it look like? What the tax cuts that were passed in December of last year, there's obviously a great bit of support among that for that among Republicans and perhaps some other people. It doesn't seem to be a national issue in this campaign, but what was your understanding and impression of those tax cuts, and then the tax code in general? What should be the guiding principles?
I think we need less politicians who feel it's part of their job to tell people how they should feel about their own checkbooks and bank accounts at the end of the month. If you feel like you have more money at the end of the month in your checkbook because of the tax cut, great. If you feel like you've fallen behind, I understand. If you feel like you received a modicum of a break, but it looks like folks who get exemptions for their private jet got a lot more of a break, I hear you. I think we did need tax reform. What we got was not what we needed. I can also tell you, I think any bill written by special interest an hour before the senators have a chance to read this massive bill, if you care about transparency and accountability, that was a travesty of both. I can tell you that Dr. Harris brought Speaker Paul Ryan to our district, to Kent County and Carroll County, to talk about the tax bill. And a week later, Speaker Ryan started using the E word, entitlements, to talk about Social Security. This tour we're doing, we're doing this thing called Jesse on the Job. We're trying to visit as many small businesses as possible. They had me mucking a horse stall in Harford County. I was on a waterman boat. I was packing crab meat yesterday in Somerset. I was making Philly cheesesteaks at a deli in Baltimore County. Our small business owners needed relief. Our Alice families, I mentioned Alice families. That's the working class families who some month have to choose between prescription drugs and food or prescription drugs or rent. They needed help too. So we're going to need a new tax bill because what we need is not what we get. And the longer the bill is, the more pages, the more chances for loopholes for special interests. If you're wondering about exemptions for your private jet, I'm not your guy. That's okay. Dr. Harris is your guy.
Is the tax code the tax cuts, which many people are predicting will create tremendous deficits, in the general scheme of things when it comes to the economy, how important are deficits? There are some estimates that we're going to be borrowing $1 trillion a year for the foreseeable future, and that the amount of money we're going to pay in interest will just in a few years exceed the amount of money we're paying for Medicaid. It will exceed by 2024 the cost of the entire military budget. How important are deficits in the general scheme of things?
I think if we started looking at what are the top threats to our ability to continue to be a global leader, you would have to look at hyperpartisanship in Congress, and you have to look at the deficit as you started putting together the list. Stay with me here, Don, but we are supported by President George W. Bush's Secretary of the VA. He's a would-be constituent who lives in the Eastern Shore, died in the mold Republican. And we met through a mutual supporter who happens to be an ardent environmentalist. And when we met, I spoke every ounce of truth to power you would hope the person in my shoes did. I said, sir, it's an honor to meet you, but you have to understand, I'm a very proud veteran, but I joined because I was teaching English to Iraqi refugees in Damascus, Syria in 2006 and could see the war in Iraq wasn't going very well. He said, that's okay. And then I said, I'm also a very proud veteran, but you should know my wife runs a nonprofit. That's a trade association, and her member organizations prevent military veteran suicide, especially trained service dogs, paired with vets coming back from post-traumatic stress, military sexual trauma, traumatic brain injury. I said, my wife runs this unbelievable organization, but it began because the VA wasn't doing enough to prevent. We lose 22 military veterans a day to suicide. It's a silent crisis that we don't talk enough about. He said, that's okay too. We bonded over the deficit, and we bonded over veterans issues. So I'm trying to give you an idea of how people, you know, he as a die-the-mold Republican, cannot understand how this tax bill just exploded the deficit. And part of that question, I think, was asking what's at stake with this the deficit. And I think that's my best way to explain to you, in a campaign like ours, what's at stake when it comes to the deficit.
Let's go to the phones to Diane in Kent Island. Welcome to Midday with Jesse Colvin.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Want to thank you for your bipartisan spirit. I think we are all ready for our elected officials to govern instead of being ideologues. So thank you for that. My question deals with people with disabilities. The current administration appears to be attacking many of the statutes and regulatory provisions that protect and empower people with disabilities for full inclusion in their communities. And I wondered what your position is on the Americans with Disability Act, as well as other provisions, IDEA in education and so forth, to protect people with disabilities so that they can fully be included in their communities.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dan. Appreciate it.
Dan, that's a great question. There are some things that I learned in history class that were presented to us as big debates in American history that had been resolved and settled, and we're moving on to the next thing. And now all of a sudden we seem to find ourselves living in an era where things that were settled seemingly are now under attack or up for debate with no, perhaps very little merit behind it. So whether we're talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act, or we're talking about the function of the Environmental Protection Agency, or we're talking about the Department of Education, they all seem to be being stripped away of what really the mission behind those organizations or those bills. We did our victory rally after a primary victory in Cecil County in Northeast at the Fire Hall. We brought, for the first time we had a large enough crowd, we bought an interpreter for folks who were hearing disabled. And that was our way of, we wanted to start off the general election campaign by saying we're trying to be inclusive and understand if I can't talk about every issue under the sun, at least we can send a signal that we understand that we're trying to be inclusive. And there's a lot of people out there worried about a lot of things, chiefly this. There's this, you would hope, part of this job is going to be bring as much serious, rigorous oversight to places like the Department of Education under the Betsy DeVos team. That's something that I think Diane and everyone else should expect me to do. I will also tell you, I think Diane's from Kent Island, so we are.
Yes.
If you tell the story of our, you know, in Queen Anne's County, so that the RV tour we did, we started off with a waterman, Captain Lamont Wright. Diane might know him. And then we went to a farm in Queen Anne's, and then we went to a medium-sized company that produces parts for the Navy on Kent Island. And then there's this new restaurant deli in Centerville that's really become a hub of the town. And then we did a town hall that night. One of the reasons we're doing this RV tour is I think we need more politicians who aren't afraid of their constituents and actually want to interact and listen to them. So this is, tonight will be 11 town halls in a row. And the idea is I just get up and I very briefly tell people who I am, what the campaign's all about, what I'm all about. But it's mostly just a chance to listen.
Let's see if we can sneak a couple more calls in. Farouk in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Jesse Colvin.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Farouk. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mr. Coleman. How are you? And the question I have, about two questions. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Right. The first question I have, that Mr. Coleman, you were mostly in the Eastern Shore. Would you tell the people that what kind of political experience you have, whether you're a central committee member or city council or county council or state delegation or state politics, any kind of political experience you have when you sit in the highest level for the federal level as a congressman?
Okay, Farouk, we're running out of time, so I appreciate that question and your political experience. And how important is political experience in this day and age?
Farouk, thank you very much for the question. For the people on the Eastern Shore, the people on the Western Shore, and everyone else who's listening, this is my first foray into politics, and I think that's a very good thing. There was no lightning bolt moment, but at some point last year, I turned to my wife and said, the politics of division are ripping our country apart. We have to do something about it. I feel a call to service like I did after 9/11. That's how I ended up studying Arabic and teaching English to Iraqi refugees in Syria and ultimately joining the Army. My wife runs this nonprofit to prevent veteran suicide. So she said, I'm doing pretty good work. You go
figure
it out.
What's the appeal of elective office, the job itself? What are you looking forward to if you're elected? What are you looking forward to in the day-to-day work that you would be doing? What's attractive to you about elective office as opposed to staying in business where you currently are?
I've never heard that question asked like that before. That's interesting way to ask it. I see this in very similar terms to how I ended up in the military. Uncle Sam needs good men and women to step up. When I turned to my wife and said, we got to do something, she said, she's doing pretty good work, you go figure it out. I look around the country, to Farouk's point, I'm young, I'm 34. I look around the country, all these veterans running this year, Connor Lamb, the young Marine who won the special election up in Pennsylvania several months ago, he's really a blueprint for our race, and some of the other veterans running. I looked at their ages, and I looked at their war records, and I looked at their business backgrounds, and I saw a lot of myself. And I think it's a good thing, it's actually a great thing, that we're going to have a new generation of service-minded servant leaders who want to come to Washington to make Congress work, and they're going to replace career politicians who care more about their next election and doing what their party bosses and their special interests bosses want them to do. So I think we need a new generation. We need some new blood, and I'm proud to be part of it.
Very quickly, and we are running out of time, you have a proposal to convert Medicaid and CHIP to healthcare programs, put them under the auspices of Medicare. How would that work?
Sure. I mean, so if we're talking healthcare in our district, the first thing we have to talk about is there are 54,000 people in our district who rely on the Affordable Care Act. Like it, love it, hate it, think we need to tear it down and start over. The first step is Andy Harris has voted to repeal this over 70 times. So the first step is protecting those 54,000 people. There is a plan out there. It's Medicare eligibility for all. And one step of three is Medicaid and CHIP would come underneath the Medicare umbrella.
Well, we will hopefully have more time to speak about this as the campaign goes, but we won't be able to have you back on the show. But I do appreciate your having your taking the time today to talk to us, and good luck out on the trail.
Tom, thank you very much. I think showing up counts and listening well counts even more, so thank you to your listeners.
Jesse Colvin is the Democratic nominee for Congress in Maryland's 1st District, which includes all of the Eastern Shore and parts of Baltimore, Carroll, and Harford counties. We've got a link to the Jesse Colvin campaign website at WIPR.org/midday. Our series of conversations with the candidates continues next Thursday with Mr. Colvin's opponent, Congressman Andy Harris. And on Monday, October 20th, John Olszewski Jr. and Al Redmer will join me here in Studio A to talk about the important issues in the race for Baltimore County Executive. Election Day is Tuesday, November 6th. That's in less than a month. Early voting begins in 2 weeks on October 25th. The last day to register is next Tuesday. If you vote early, you can register on the same day that you vote. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, the midday news wrap and a theater review from J. Wynn Russick. Lunch today was provided by Eddie's of Roland Park, Baltimore's gourmet grocer since 1944. Eddie's of Roland Park offers a selection of local gift baskets and Maryland jumbo lump crab cakes that can be shipped anywhere throughout the U.S. Details online at eddiesofrolandpark.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.